Everybody, welcome to the What Is Money Show. I am thrilled to have you here joining me on my mission to help shine light on the corruption of money. Now, a little bit about this show and how it makes money. We are 100% sponsor-based, which means that all the revenues we derive come from sponsorships. But I try to be very selective about the sponsors that I work with, specifically trying to choose those who have values well aligned to the values expressed on this show, like freedom, education, self-sovereignty, etc. So what I'm going to do is a few ad reads right here at the top of the show and then a few ad reads in the middle. And I hope you won't skip them. I hope you'll take the time, listen, and see what they have to offer, because again, these are hand-selected sponsors. Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Swan Private. Swan Private is a concierge financial services firm based in Los Angeles. Now, I've known the Swan team for years, and these guys are laser focused on the Bitcoin mission. They even have a zero tolerance policy for all shitcoining. Recently, their CEO, Corey Clipston, was instrumental in calling out many of these crypto scams right before they collapsed, saving a lot of people a lot of money in the process. Swan Private focuses on guiding high net worth individuals and businesses on all aspects of Bitcoin strategy, including buying, custodying, and market research. This concierge service provides you direct access to a private advisor by text, phone, or email. So go to swanprivate.com/breedlove today to sign up. Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Ledin. Ledin lets you do more with your digital assets. For instance, Ledin offers a B2X loan product that lets you leverage your existing Bitcoin to buy even more Bitcoin. Or you can also get traditional Bitcoin collateralized US dollar loans through Ledin as well. Ledin also offers both Bitcoin and USDC denominated savings accounts, letting you generate yield on your digital assets. Recently, Ledin has launched a Bitcoin mortgage product as well that lets you use Bitcoin to buy a home or finance one that you already own. So go to ledin.io, that's ledin.io today to sign up.
Obi Nwosu, welcome back to the What Is Money Show.
Robert Breedlove, lovely to be back.
Glad to have you here. As we were just saying offline, I think we left off last time just getting into the conversation about Fedimint. And as I have here in my notes, Fedimint is a privacy-preserving custody system, which is a federated system of guardians. And I have multi-sig plus Shomian eCash plus Lightning Network. Can you help us understand exactly what Fedimint is and what it is comprised of?
Okay, well, I'll answer that in different layers. So first of all, at the sort of most philosophical layer, Fedimint is the missing piece of the Bitcoin open source ecosystem. It's the thing that completes it. It's Jerry Maguire's Rene Zellweger, effectively. So you have at the base, you've got Bitcoin, the Bitcoin protocol, which is your hard money. It's your store of value, your meritocratic money. And on top of that, we have the Lightning Network, the Lightning protocol, which takes that Bitcoin and allows you to send it around from person to person at lightning speed, at low cost, with enhanced privacy. But the missing piece and what Fedimint provides you is a way of custodying that Bitcoin with enhanced security, incredible privacy, and also extensibility, something that we haven't talked about much, but is actually a core part of Fedimint as well. So it can be extended with extra federated finance features. Think of it as FediFi as well. So when you add those together, and it works very well with Lightning, and in fact, it improves with Lightning, and Lightning works very well with Fedimint. In fact, Fedimint can help scale Lightning. So they work very, very well with each other. So when you add it all together, you have a way of holding your money at rest with privacy, spending it with enhanced privacy through Lightning, extending features and functionality through Fedimint, sending the money around at low cost through Lightning as well, and all backed by and working closely with Bitcoin at the base. So that's it in terms of where it fits within the Bitcoin ecosystem. And if we look into Fedimint itself, how does it do this? Fedimint is a form of federated application server. So it can take any application that would normally only run by a single person or a single process, but then split it up so that it can be run by a number of people, this federation, such that as long as the majority of them are honest and running, it will keep on operating correctly. And in fact, even if a minority, a significant minority of them are honest, it will prevent a small majority of them subverting the process and forcing it to do something you don't want. So, i.e., it gives you a much greater level of bad actor protection. But it's able to run any process, pretty much any process in theory that could run normally on one machine, but you can federate it to reduce your reliance on a bad actor. So it gives you enhanced censorship resistance, not as much as a fully decentralized network like Bitcoin, but far more than a centralized service such as running it on an exchange. So that's what a federation applies. Now, why would you, there is an overhead to do that. It's you can imagine, just like the Bitcoin network at an extreme has a massive overhead to provide that level of decentralization, federations are somewhere in the middle. There is significant overhead compared to just running on one machine, running in the federation. So why would you want to do that? There are very few processes you want to purposely increase the overhead of running it for increased bad actor protection. And they come down to financial services. So holding your money, multi-sig, Bitcoin multi-sig is one of the first functionality that comes as standard with a Fedimint federation. Maintaining cryptographically near perfect privacy. We use the protocol called Charmian eCash, which was invented by David Chaum in 1983. In fact, next year will be its 40th anniversary. It's considered catnip to cryptographers. It provides near cryptographically perfect privacy, but until the use of Bitcoin and federations, it had one weakness, which it relied on one bank, a single actor. But the federation, again, allows you to federate that single actor. So you now rely on a community of trusted guardians. And also, federations and Fedimints are not dealing normally with payments between people anywhere in the world. So it provides a module for a federated access to the Lightning Network. And so it works very well with Lightning nodes and the rest of the Lightning Network. So those three things come as standard with Fedimint: custodying your Bitcoin, maintaining cryptographically perfect privacy, and interacting with the Lightning Network. You can extend it with other features, and many people are looking to work on that in the future. But by default, that gives you the minimum you need to custody in a community context. And then the last bit that's really important is, just like Bitcoin is a combination of technology and also game theory, a human aspect, the same is true with Bitcoin and with Fedimint. The technology we've explained, but just as important is the context is we recommend it's used in. So it's recommended that you use this for community custody. This is what we call communal second party custody. So a community comes together, they have a requirement to, like everybody in the world, the community and the members of the community have a requirement to hold money, to transfer money, to interact, to perform commerce. This is an essential step to improving and enriching and bettering the lives of the people in that community. So they come together, instead of relying on a third party, a stranger, who is incentivized by money. And we all know with recent events that can end badly, giving money to someone who's incentivized by money. The community comes together, determines the most trustworthy, the most high integrity, the most community service oriented members of that community to act as guardians on behalf of the community, with some small level of technical skill, but not very much. They have to be the same level of skill needed to operate a set top box for a cable television program, but so non-zero level of technical skill. So these guardians are then chosen to run the Fedimint software. They form a federation, which will then run in a federated manner the multi-sig for the community, the Charmian eCash protocol to provide privacy for the community, and the Lightning interface protocol to provide connectivity to the Lightning network on behalf of the community. So effectively, the community comes together to custody Bitcoin on behalf of the community, to empower the community without relying on anyone outside of that community. It's like be your community's bank as opposed to be your own bank.
So that, I mean, would that be then like the historical corollary to this is like a communal banking model, but then somehow facilitated by better software, right? You get more privacy, simplified custody, et cetera.
That's very much the case. And this is not even historical. In the West, it's more historical, although we still have community banking. But in the global South, it is still an everyday, very, very common occurrence. And actually, in post-Soviet regions, people are living under the yoke of authoritarian regimes and dictatorships. So if you take either of those two groups, the global South is more than half the world. People living, if you split the world in a separate way, people who are not living in democracies, people who are living under the yoke of authoritarian regimes and dictatorships, again, that's more than half the world. And combined, they're two-thirds of the world. People living in more affluent parts of the world, which are democracies, are the minority. We are the edge case. So for the normal case of the world, you either have no banking, like that we would consider reasonable levels of banking, or you have banking, but you cannot trust your banking. So, for example, if you're in an authoritarian regime, we have stories of people receiving money from their normal bank account. KYC goes along with that. The recipient is in a country under the yoke of an authoritarian regime or dictator, and they get arrested because the source is not, it's the source of a person who's identified as having sympathies with the opposition to the dictator. So they get arrested, they get imprisoned, sometimes killed. So they have banking, but they cannot trust it. Although they may be relatively affluent as a country. And then other parts of the world where they just don't have banking. In these scenarios, they have to rely upon their community. And so communal forms of banking are alive and strong. There are names such as in Kenya. I've seen these things called SACCOs, and that's where communities, villages come together. They cannot get loans from normal banks, so they have to store. They give one person the task of collecting a small amount of money from different people in a village or a town or even a small city, and then that's collected. And then they do different things with it, depending on the country, depending on the situation. Sometimes they store it and give it to one person at the end of each month and a different person each month. Sometimes they just create a pool and then they lend out effectively to other people within the community and provide interest that goes back into the pool. Sometimes it acts as an insurance fund. Sometimes it acts as a fund to underwrite people's loans. So then the person goes back to a bank where they normally can't get a loan. But then they can show that this community fund has got a certain amount of capital in it, and the community as a whole underwrites the loan on behalf of the individual. And because it's underwritten by this pool of money, the individual is able to get a much more affordable set of terms for their loan from an external party. And there's everything in between. You also have systems like Hawala, which are systems for money transmission, but rely on communities as well. So if you look in the Middle East, in Southeast Asia, in Latin America, in Africa, these are prevalent in pretty much every country, and it's the norm. But the problem is, because they're manual processes, they rely on a single person that you trust. And also, you don't have privacy, because the people know who's being paid and what, etc. And privacy is important, especially when we reach global scale. Right now, we have three or four, as of the implosion of one of the largest exchanges, three or four exchanges with well over 90%, 90, 95% of all volume traded on them, and a large percentage of all users custodying with them. And if we allow this to scale, we're going to get to a world of 8 billion people with accounts where 90 to 95% will have accounts on half a dozen exchanges. We worry about CBDCs with countries with populations of 100 million. Well, there will be these private enterprises, which are effectively oligarchies. Structurally, most companies are oligarchies run by one person with absolute control, or at best, a few people like a board. We'll have full visibility on people's holding people's balances, full visibility on their payments, full visibility on their trades. If they add cards and so on and so forth, they have full visibility. That's an Orwellian nightmare. And so at scale, we need privacy. But even today, in a community context, in a local community context, privacy is even more important. Even within the smaller and more close in the community, the more important it is for you to have financial privacy. You might have, for example, lost your job or have some sensitive news that you don't want to share with relatives or family. You know, you might have things that you're trying to work out. You want to buy things or to make some tests or whatever it may be. And having privacy from your next door neighbors and your family and your brothers and sisters is really, really important. So in a community context, you have to, by default, have perfect privacy if you can. So it's essential to have it from the get-go.
Interesting. So I like a lot of things here. So Fedi, I think this is how you said it, is the completion of the Bitcoin open source tech stack. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's correct.
That's correct. Okay. So that's really interesting. And then I like the perspective you gave on increasing the cost of overhead to disincentivize dishonesty. Because that's another framing for Bitcoin. It's all this redundancy, but it's really just there to disincentivize dishonesty such that we get everyone adhering to the 21 million hard cap, for instance. So that's an interesting perspective on the game theory of Bitcoin. Now, you mentioned obtaining near perfect privacy, I guess you might say, in this new model. And in my notes here, I have the Las Vegas example. I don't know if those two things are related.
They're related. Many of your listeners may be aware that transactions on the Bitcoin main chain are not perfectly private. There is the very fact that you want to maintain auditability, to know that the one of its most important features of the 21 million cap has not been busted, has not been broken, requires you to maintain certain information on balances being held in different UTXOs and being able to add those up to make sure they are what they're supposed to be. When transactions happen, to send value from one person to another, you want to be able to ensure that no money has been printed by some nefarious bad actor. But this requires a level of traceability. And people are looking at ways of reducing this. There are zero knowledge proofs, confidential transactions, but there's still a level of traceability because you still see where the movements of money, you just don't see the amounts, for example. Perfect privacy and perfect auditability are sort of in conflict with each other. So at the base layer, out of the two, the way it's structured, the code has prioritized auditability over perfect privacy. But at higher layers, when you have a trusted community where you know that you can make the assumption that we can optimize our system for perfect privacy. But by definition, if you have perfect privacy, then you lose auditability, because if it's perfect privacy, you don't know the balances of people. You also don't know who has paid as the operator of this, or someone viewing the network, as it were. You don't know who has paid what, so you don't know what transactions have occurred. And also, you don't know how many users you have. These are all pieces of information. If you're perfect privacy, then it shouldn't be possible to know that I'm a member of the Federation or not. Therefore, the Federation shouldn't know whether they have 3 users or 3 billion users. They cannot know. And then they shouldn't know who has paid whom, because I want to have privacy of my transactions. And they shouldn't know what balances are held by whom. they know overall that this, just by looking at the amount of Bitcoin held with them, the total amount of Bitcoin, but they cannot know how it's distributed amongst which users and when those distributions happened. If you have all those three elements, then you have near perfect privacy. There's always ways in which users can box themselves or reduce their privacy. They can go in front of all the guardians, say, "Hey guys, I'm doing a transaction now," and look at that, me doing a transaction. And that's actually not the network itself doxing you, but it is possible for you to intentionally or dox yourself. But if you're in the street and you make a payment from within the Fedimint app to someone else within the Fedimint ecosystem, just to give you a background, when you deposit Bitcoin into the system, it goes into this federated multi-sig wallet run by the Fedimint Federation. But then they issue as a federation in a federated manner, i.e., not trusting any single guardian, but as a whole, they issue an equal number of eCash tokens, Charming eCash tokens. And these are tokens which are indistinguishable. They're issued in a way which means they're indistinguishable from one another. You could have issued a token a second ago, and then someone asked to redeem a token a second later, and you have no idea if it was one you issued a year ago or the one you just issued. There's no way to determine the difference, because when you sign it to say it's valid, it's a blinded signature, i.e., you don't know what you're signing. So when it comes back to you after the like it's been unblinded, you don't know if it was the one you signed a second ago or a year ago. So there's no way for you to know that. So these eCash tokens are bearer instruments. In the naive sort of common sense understanding of the word, i.e., you have a token per coin. So for example, if you had, let's say you had 10.51 units. So if it was in dollars, $10.51, or for example, just for simplicity, 10.51 units of these tokens. And that could be 10.51 Bitcoin, for example. If I wanted to pay someone $1.11, I don't send them a transaction for $1.11. I'll have a number of eCash tokens of different denominations. So I would have 10 $1 or $1 eCash tokens, 5 $0.10 eCash tokens, and 1 $0.01 eCash token. So if I want to send you $1.11, I would literally send you a $1 token. I would send you a 10-cent token, eCash token, and I'll send you a 1-cent eCash token. The same way you would do with cash. If you had $10.51 in your purse or wallet, it was 10 5 10 $1 notes, 5 $0.10 notes, and 1 $0.01 note, and you wanted to give someone $1.11, you would give them a $1 note, a 10-cent note, and a 1-cent note. It's exactly the same, but instead of it being coins you're sending different files, each one representing a physical piece of cash. And as such, it's this bearer instrument that can be sent around from one person to another directly without going through the guardians. Once they're created, you can pass them around like eCash. In fact, this allows us in a community context to do some very interesting things. So one of the things that we are going to be adding or showing in the future is the ability for limited periods of time to make transactions without an internet connection, because you can send it directly, these eCash tokens, within a community. Even if you lose internet, you can still send the tokens, for example, through QR codes from one person to another, because they are bearer instruments. So that's very useful. If the internet's gone down, or if you're underground and you need to send money from one person to the other, as long as you're part of the same community, if you want to make a Lightning payment to someone on the other side of the world, you won't be able to because you have no internet. But guess what? You have no internet, so you won't be able to anyway. But if you're local in El Zonte, and the internet's just gone down, but you want to buy something by the side of the road, you could still show an animated QR code with the displaying all the different eCash tokens and the other person can scan and receive that. Now, there is a risk when the internet goes back up of double spend risk, but the likelihood that the merchant or the seller on the side of the road, who's all part of the same community, so you'll still know when you receive the tokens as the receiver and who you received it from. The likelihood that the sender in that context is going to take the code, decompile it, patch the code, recompile the APK, and then make the payment so that they can double spend a few cents or a few dollars, and in the full knowledge that they have proof of punishability because they are part of a community. The community can ostracize them, or they can walk up to them and punch them in the nose. Proof of being able to be walked up to being punched on the nose ability is possible within a community, which is not possible if you're buying something from the other side of the world from a stranger. It is very possible compared to the cost. It means that actually for limited periods of time, no internet doesn't stop you transacting. And these are all possible because of this bearer instrument. And there are many, many other really exciting features that are possible when you recognize that you're working in a community context, and that gives you superpowers that you don't have in other contexts.
That's super interesting. Basically, they have skin in the game still as part of these communities. So that prevents them, or hopefully disincentivizes bad behavior. That's a good point there. So
it disincentivizes. Yeah.
Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is a Bitcoin-enabled alternative to legacy health insurance. Now let's face it, legacy health insurance is an absolute scam. Nobody can explain this better than the legendary comedian Chris Rock.
Insurance. You got to have some insurance. You got to. That's an insurance. They shouldn't even call it insurance. They should just call it in case shit. Like, I give a company some money in case shit happens. Now, if shit don't happen, shouldn't I get my money back?
So with CrowdHealth, instead of just paying premiums that you'll never see again, you can hold part of this pool of savings in dollars and in Bitcoin through CrowdHealth. And when you have a health event, you can draw against this pool of communal savings. So go to joincrowdhealth.com/breedlove to learn more or sign up. Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Wasabi Wallet. Wasabi lets you use Bitcoin privately while still maintaining full control over your money. Specifically, Wasabi Wallet is an open source, non-custodial wallet with privacy built in by default. By using Wasabi, you're effectively putting the private back in private property. Wasabi Wallet is an easy-to-use privacy wallet that can support any amount of Bitcoin transactions. So go to wasabiwallet.io today to download this state-of-the-art wallet software. Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Masterworks. Masterworks gives you access to the fine art market at more affordable price points. They do this by offering you fractional shares in their $500 million portfolio of fine art. Now, fine art is an alternative asset class, and historically, it's been a great performer and a really good hedge against inflation. Most investors typically hold anywhere from 2 to 10% of their assets in an asset like fine art. To sign up or learn more, go to masterworks.com and use promo code BREEDLOVE. Now, I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Casa. Casa makes it simple to buy and secure your Bitcoin without wondering whether you're doing it right. Specifically, Casa provides a multi-key custody solution, which is by far the most secure way to custody your Bitcoin. Now, when I talk about Bitcoin being theft-proof money or inviolable private property, a multi-key custody model is exactly what I am talking about. Using multiple keys lets you maintain full control of your Bitcoin while also giving you redundancy in case you lose one of the keys. It's also the best way to secure your Bitcoin for inheritance planning purposes. So go to keys.casa, that's C-A-S-A, today to sign up and use discount code BREEDLOVE.
This trade-off relationship that exists between auditability and privacy, this is something I think a lot of people struggle to get their head around in Bitcoin because they don't understand why Bitcoin isn't private at layer one, right? Something like Monero or any of these other privacy coins. But you do have this trade-off, right? You have to optimize for supply integrity or auditability, which requires a certain degree of information being shared. But that the trade-off to that obviously is privacy. So I guess it's layers two and above where we seek to add real privacy to Bitcoin. I mean, it sounds like Fediment's a big step in that direction. And then these Chomian eCash tokens, I think is what you called them. They're basically fully fungible bearer assets. So are these like...
fully fungible bearer assets within the context of the Federation community. But they cannot be used outside of the community.
Got it. So the Bitcoin that's being used to fund, I guess, to mint those Chomian eCash tokens, that Bitcoin is then just staked inside the software or held inside the software? How do you know that
yes.
Bitcoin so, is out of circulation, I guess?
Yes. So what happens is, remember, the Fediment run multiple applications and it comes a standard with free, a multi-sig Bitcoin wallet application that's run collectively amongst the guardians, what we call the guardians, the people running the Fediment software, a Chomian eCash system that can mint Chomian eCash based on certain rules and destroy it based on certain rules. And then the Lightning interface that effectively can emulate aspects of the Lightning network so that Lightning nodes connecting to any one of the users of the Fediment can feel like they're operating with the Lightning network, even though they're not. So it sort of stimulates the Lightning network for Lightning nodes to connect to and interact with users of the Fediment. But in the case of money coming in, let's say someone wants to deposit on the main chain a certain amount of Bitcoin and be credited eCash. Well, they deposit, the Federation of Guardians are running the multi-sig wallet. An API call is made effectively to receive an address to send money to send Bitcoin, being the money, to. Bitcoin is sent into that address. Once it's had a number of confirmations, so we're comfortable it's a rollback is unlikely, this triggers the Chomian eCash operation to mint an equivalent number of eCash tokens. So if the value of them was, you know, let's say there was 1,200 sats, it might print one 1,000 sat eCash token and two 100 sat eCash tokens. And then it will place them temporarily in an account, this effectively waiting for someone to connect to that account with a secret. That secret would have been determined at the point of depositing the Bitcoin address. So only the person depositing the Bitcoin address would be aware of that secret. That same person will then come back with the secret saying, look, I have the secret, please give me the amount in this account. And then they would send to that user the amount in that account. So they wouldn't know who the user was. They just know that it must be the same person because they know the secret that was given at the point of depositing the Bitcoin, and the same person is now, or someone is coming up with a secret. It doesn't actually have to be the same person, but just like with other cryptographic and hashes and so on, the chance that someone could guess that secret is infeasibly small. So it's likely to be the same person or someone else who that person knowingly gave the secret to, but someone would be able to collect that. So that's what would happen when you deposit. And when you withdraw, someone with an eCash token will send it to the Federation with information saying where I'd like the related Bitcoin to be sent to. And the eCash, the Federation again, would check the tokens coming in using the federated Chomian Mint to make sure they were signed by the multi-sig details that the Federation was responsible for. So they can say, okay, all these eCash tokens are valid, destroy those eCash tokens, and then take the equivalent amount of Bitcoin and send it on to the address that the instructions provided. Yeah, so that's how Bitcoin main chain would come in and out. I think behind your question was what's to prevent them just because they're perfectly private, what's to prevent someone just sending in a different set of eCash tokens, creating a different set of eCash tokens and withdrawing out Bitcoin, or just simply withdrawing out Bitcoin and not redeeming any eCash tokens, leaving the Fedimint with a fractional reserve, i.e. less Bitcoin than the amount. And the only thing stopping that is the decision on the two things. One is the fact that it works in a federated manner. So you'd need to have, I'll give you an example. Let's say there are seven guardians and you have a 5 of 7 multi-sig or 5 of 7 federation setup. That means it needs 5 of them to work together to sign a transaction, or 5 of them to work together to mint a transaction. So this gives you 2 levels of protection. As long as 5 or more of them are running, the system will run. So it has protection from being stopped, censored effectively. It has censorship protection of 2. So if one goes down, like the machine has failed, it needs to be restarted, or just completely stops, you will still be able to keep ticking and going on. If 2 goes down, you'll still be able to keep ticking. So it can support in that scenario, 2 people stopping, and it can still continue to operate, continue to process transactions. If 3 or more go down, it can no longer process transactions. The transactions will be stuck there until some of them go back online. But even if 3 go offline, or even if 4, which is now a majority of the 7 people, go offline, if they become bad actors, 4 people become bad actors, they still cannot, they can censor, they can cause the Fedimint to stop processing withdrawals, deposits, but they cannot send the money to addresses that they do not want to. They cannot print tokens out of thin air, because you need at least 5. So you would have to get to a point where at least 5 of these 7 members of the community became bad actors at the same time, within minutes of each other, before they can actively print, actively perform any application or run any application within the Fedimint. In this case, the relevant ones would be the eCash token minting and destruction code, or the Bitcoin multisig code, before they could actually effectively lead to something that was a fractional reserve bank. And now, that's the first thing, just technically, that gives you a level of protection against censorship and protection against bad actors. That's an even greater level of protection against bad actors subverting the network. However, there's the other part, and this the social aspect is really important. We recommend that Fedimints are used in a community context. So it's a community where people have shared interests, goals, knowledge of each other, and they come together and choose the people who've acted, who have 3 things in common. 1, proof of integrity. They've acted with integrity through the lived in experience, to the most level of integrity, the lived in experience of people within their community. So they've proof of community service. They've been community service oriented. They've always thought about what's best for the community and they've acted in that. And then proof of passion for the community. They're passionate about the community. They care about the community. So if you solve for those 3 and you use the wisdom of the community to locate the people who are best fit that profile, the belief is that the inference is that the likelihood that they will then change their character of a lifetime the majority of them within a few minutes of each other is for me personally, there is obviously a risk, but if I had to choose between that and the alternative, which is a third party custodial exchange run by a stranger somewhere, probably on the other side of the world, who has no interest in me other than as a profit center, and I'm just a statistic on a computer, and their sole interest is to try and extract as much money from me as possible, and I'm entrusting them with my money because of flashy advertising and so on. Out of the two, the one I have proof of punishability with, and the one I do not, the one who cares about me and has acted through their my lived in experience with and the experience of my community with integrity, and I need, and a quorum of them will have to change that versus a single person who I have no idea what their level of integrity is. And maybe just the regulation is just keeping them from their own animalistic, selfish instinct. I know which one I will choose. But everybody's obviously up to make their own choice. Now, the other option is first party custody. And that is the gold standard. That's the Bitcoin standard. But the challenge with first party custody is threefold. One, there is a cost overhead. When you have Fannie Mae community custody, the cost of running this is amortized across the community. So if it's 1,000 people, then and you have four or five guardians, then you're amortizing that across 1,000, 2,000 people. So it becomes a lot less expensive on per person on average. Whereas if it's first party custody, you have to bear that cost yourself. So the risk is you therefore underspend on it, so you don't do it properly. Or it's just a cost which then limits how affordable it is. If you've only got $100 worth of Bitcoin, not 100 Bitcoin, you should self-custody if you have 100 Bitcoin, probably. But if you've got $100 worth of Bitcoin, it probably doesn't make sense to buy free hardware wallets and steel cards and so on, which cost you, you know, $300-$400 to do. It doesn't make sense. Probably makes sense to use the $300-$400 to buy more Bitcoin. But if you've got 10,000, 20,000, you might want to start thinking about it. The second challenge is technical complexity. It's getting easier and easier all the time, but not everybody's technically minded. And even things that are relatively simple, that's why I say in my world, when we're talking about 8 billion users, even operating a set-top box for many hundreds of millions of people could be considered technically daunting. So for many people, the task of operating a hardware wallet or their own software wallets may be technically uncomfortable. So that's the second set of criteria. You have to be above a certain level of technical acumen. In the Bitcoin space, many people are highly technically comfortable. So they don't recognize that there's many people who find it very difficult to do things that we take for granted. And then the final thing is fear. You know, this is something that, again, we have to work on as a community. But a very large percentage, and this is something that shocked me, but I came to understand as running an exchange, have been taught, and our whole society has made us afraid of being able to manage our own money. And sometimes it's rightful. Some people are very clumsy and so on, and it's just their nature. And they feel that they will lose the money if they were asked to look after it themselves. So to force them to do that, it reconciles them to being, you know, penniless potentially. So, but others, it's just, I think for a larger set, it's culturally, we've been taught to be afraid to self-custody. And we need to teach people to have the bravery to do that. But that's going to take, this is something that you would have been taught throughout your entire life. And it's going to take time to unlearn that, to crack through that veil. And some people at a certain advanced age may not want to anymore. But the people who do want to, it still takes time to get to the point where you're comfortable with moving large amounts of money and taking full responsibility for your money. But in that interim period, we see this sort of influx of regulation coming in and ever increasing. We're seeing the return to the bad old days of exchanges and trusted third parties, trusted in quotes, third parties, taking advantage of that trust. And, you know, we at Ferdy and the people working on the Ferdy Mint protocol don't believe we can wait for that period for everybody to not feel the fear of self-custody. And we have to make the process of getting off exchanges our highest priority.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. And with the, so the multi-guardians in a multi-sig, you're basically saying that collusion is necessary to gamify or to game that system.
Yeah.
That gives you a lot more resistance to these internal debacles versus the single guy running an exchange in a far off land, as you described. That makes a lot of sense. And I guess the game theory too, there is then preserving Fediment as a full reserve bank. Is that correct? So it's much, there has to be some form of, I guess, defection in this game theoretic. I don't know if you call it a shelling point or what, but basically wherever all the guardians are operating in their own self-interest, someone needs to defect from that to make this thing become a fractional reserve bank. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, as I said, in the example of five of seven, one person decides to act as a bad actor. One risk proof of punishment. They're within the community context. An obvious form of non-violent punishment is just ostracized from the community, for example. Their machine, their Fediment server, they would then have to take the Fediment server software, patch it, modify it, reinstall. It will then start to operate in a manner which is not compatible with the rest of the system, i.e. not signing transactions that others wish to sign, etc. That would then be picked up by the other guardians' servers, and it would be kicked off. It would be ignored for the purposes of transactions until it went back in line. So the users of the system wouldn't notice it, other than potentially their mobile wallets, just like you have Lightning wallets and Bitcoin wallets, their Fediment wallets that connect up to the Fediment network, would be aware that one of the seven guardians is no longer responding, is no longer forming part of the Federation. So they could alert the user saying, you know, you can imagine a green, amber, red sort of scenario. So it's green when all seven are working in lockstep. It goes to amber when it goes down to six, for example. And then if one more did the same thing, it could go down to red, saying you've got five of seven guardians on. And that could be, it won't know whether it's not operating in line with the others as a bad actor, or if it's just offline because it's being restarted. But it might sort of temporarily, you might see someone restart the machine and for a few minutes it goes from green to amber and then back. But you could also imagine code in future versions that people have discussed where if it goes down to amber and it stays there for a certain period of time or goes down to red, you automatically create a Lightning transaction which sends all your money to another federation. Because just like the user experience of using the app is very similar to the user experience of something like at least with the Fedi app, each Fedimint aware wallet will implement their user experience differently. We're not the only, Fedi doesn't make the only Fedimint wallet. There are at least two others I'm aware of. And we expect, just like there are multiple Lightning wallets, there'll be multiple Fedimint wallets because it's an open source protocol. But with our ones, the experience is very much like Slack. So you can be a part of Discord, multiple Slacks. You can be part of multiple Fedimints. And you can imagine a family Fedimint where you might store more money and a close friend's Fediment, but also your work Fediment. Instead of paying your employees and everybody has to figure out their own federation, you could do that. Some Bitcoin exchanges in Africa are considering creating Fediments in conjunction where they have one of the guardians, but then a consortium of other respected institutions within the community are the other guardians. And so this becomes an inexpensive way of allowing their customers to self-custody without telling them to buy hardware wallets, etc., which could be relatively expensive for their target customers. And then if you go to a larger level, we're seeing potentially the idea of cities or small towns setting up filaments, or even groups, for example, charities and human rights defender groups and NGOs and activist groups who are supporting whole movements. Again, these people have had a history of not taking money from their customers, from their users, but actually working hard and risking their lives to generate money and give money to large members of the society they're trying to help. So if they're actively giving their money and donating and raising and spending, they're unlikely to want to steal the money that they themselves donated, for example. So you can see groups that are as much as hundreds of thousands of people at the large scale, or maybe even greater, because again, there's no way to actually know how many people as members of a federation, all the way down to groups of a group of friends who are highly technical Bitcoiners who all want to maintain, they trust each other to hold their backups of their keys. And they might just determine, why don't we just create a federation of the five of us, where each of us effectively is having each other's back. And we don't invite anyone external other than mate, but you'll probably find it will start to expand slowly, because when they become the Uncle Jims of their family and say, well, you might as well just join our federation instead, so you might as well just join. And there will be no way for any of the other guardians to know anyway. But it could be as small as four people effectively own guardians and being the users for each other, and effectively the other three are the backups for them, each other. They're having each other's back, all the way up to hundreds of thousands of people run by activist groups or NGOs and so on, and everything in between.
It's really fascinating, the idea of these little communities just organically growing and becoming Bitcoin unions of some kind. I don't know. It's interesting to think about it that way. And then, so I guess the punchline there is there are significant barriers to gaming the system, you know, technical barriers, game theoretic, communal. So you're just creating a model of Bitcoin custody, privacy, and payments that's more human friendly, ultimately. Very interesting. Can we talk a little bit about the vision?
So ultimately, this federated and community-based approach to custody has a number of really powerful elements. It is built on this foundation of privacy. And because of the way it's structured, in most reasonable jurisdictions, no, it's exempt from regulation. Fediment Federation, once the federation is set up, and setting up a federation can take as little as 5 to 10 minutes. But once it's set up, for a normal user, the onboarding experience is the same as the experience of sharing your contact details with a QR code on something like WhatsApp or Telegram, i.e. it literally takes seconds. In fact, when our first version, the first live transactions, the buying the cup of coffee, we did in Hackers Congress this year, as because we sponsored it, because a year before was where myself and my co-founders first met. And it was like in honor of the location, we decided to sponsor it. When we were first testing, the sign-up process was so quick. People thought that there was a bug in the code because they would scan the QR code and see a zero. And they thought there was a problem. And the zero was the zero balance because you just logged in. And they didn't realize they had logged in because it was so fast. So the feedback was, we have to slow down the sign-in process because it's just too fast. But the point here is that you instantly have a community. You instantly can sign in. Well, you can sign in seconds. Transactions within the federation are, because guardians are running it for the community, so they're not earning money from it. Transactions within the federation are free. You have the ability to roll out to thousands of people, a community at a time, not a person at a time, but a community at a time. And let's just say a community is 1,000, 10,000 people. We have numbers for this based on a call that we made to community leaders on September the 1st of 2022, which was, and we asked community leaders to fill in actually quite a lengthy form explaining why we should work with them as to beta test the software, to beta test, not to roll out the software, to beta test it. And we were looking for 1 to 3 people, but communities and community leaders. After 6 weeks, we had several dozen, I think it was about 60, 65 communities representing nearly 1 million people. It was about 800 to submit. And so that shows you the power of talking to people and rolling out a community at a time. But then you have to understand that the other experience was that hackers.
Sorry, yeah. There was a little bit of latency and it cut off right when you were saying about 1 million people, maybe 10 seconds ago.
Okay, so it's about 1 million people. So in fact, the number was 860 something thousand. And these were people who weren't just clicking a box to say they're interested. They were filling in a multi-page form and advocating for why they should be included in the beta testing program. So one of the most powerful things about Fedimint is its ability to sign up people at rapid scale. So we can have global scale rapidly. And the reason for that, again, is the community context. So to give you two examples of why, first of all, we, on our site, September the 1st, we put out a call to community leaders to hyper-Bitcoinize their communities. Now, this wasn't just a ticking the box exercise, say, I'm interested. People had to fill in a multi-part form to advocate for why they should be included. And we wanted 1 to 3 communities to apply to roll out our beta test of the product, which will come out in early 2023. And after 6 weeks, by the middle of October, we had several dozen communities. I think it was about 60 to 65. And they were, the communities, when we totaled them up, totaled nearly 1 million people. It was like north of 860,000 people. And that's in 6 weeks, and people continue to apply still. And so that shows you the power and the speed at which you can bring on board people if you are looking to roll out a community at a time, as opposed to imagine trying to go off and individually onboard each one of those 60,000 people. So that's the first aspect, the community focus of rollout. But then the second aspect is because the app is so simple to sign up and use. In fact, it's so simple that, as I said before, some users initially didn't even realize they signed up. It was that quick. And you don't have to go through all the overhead and friction that's related to running a regulated service. We're able to onboard people incredibly quickly. So again, in Hackers Congress in Prague, 2022, we were sponsors of that event because that's an homage to where we'd first met the year before in 2021 in Hackers Congress, the founders of the company. And we created the first Fedimint, temporary Fedimint network there. And people who came to the event could sign up, download the Fedi app. It's a competing app, but we actually helped support the competing app because we want as much competition of apps as possible in this space. It drives us harder and we have to prove our work even more. And that's how you should compete, not by creating barriers to entry, just by being the best. But it was an alternative app. In fact, it was called Fluttermint. And people would download the Fluttermint app and we would credit them the Lightning Network with a certain amount of sats so they can buy the proverbial cup of coffee or beer if they were so inclined. Now, in that event, we had a good few hundred people come along to Hackers Congress and people online, because there was a website related to the Fedi event as well. So anybody who was online and saw the website, which we advertised on Twitter, could scan the QR code on the website and join the federation. Now, here's the thing. We have no idea how many people join the federation because it's perfectly private. There's no way for us to know. But we do know that we do know at least how many people in the event that came into the room that we had for the Fedi Mint and Fedi service. And so we could see that we could have very easily signed up, even manually just getting people to scan the QR code. You could have got hundreds of people to sign up in a matter of hours. You could imagine getting, because it's, again, decentralized, because each person who downloads the app can then, just like you share your contact details on Telegram or WhatsApp, can share with someone else. You share it with 10 people. They can then go off and share it each with 10 people. And they can go and share it each with 10 people. And they can share each with 10 people. Three or four of those shares with 10 people along the line, and you've got 100,000, a million users. And the overhead to do that for the Guardians would be negligible to zero. And in fact, there's ways of doing that where you can join potentially. That's not how it's currently designed, but the overhead is minimal. So, but you can make it so that you can join without even initially having to make any contact with the Guardians. So there would be no bottleneck in your speed of being able to sign up. It's just as quickly as someone can get their friends to scan a QR code. And if you look at apps that have the fastest rate of growth, they tend to be social apps that work in a community context with a very, very short sign-up time. And that's what we have done with Money, with Fedi and Fedi Mint. It's naturally community-oriented. So you have a network of people to share it with. And the sign-up process is incredibly quick. You do not need to enter your KYC details. You do not even need to enter your email address or phone number. You just need to download the app, scan a QR code, and you're done. And because of those two things, the speed at which you can roll out within a community and the focus on rolling out a community at a time, because it naturally gets its superpowers from being within a community, mean that we are able to roll out incredible scale. So because we can do this, coming back to your question, and it's just a long segue, but it's really important. It leads us to this vision. We state this on our site, we aim at global Bitcoin adoption. And we want to do that at rapid speed. In fact, our stated objective is to have 1 billion users using Bitcoin in the next couple of years. And that's very achievable because of the fact the sign-up process takes seconds, and it's by its very nature communal and viral.
That is amazing. Very cool. Very cool. The actual functionality, right? You're actually kind of, again, as you said earlier on, we're complementing the Bitcoin open source stack, right? We're addressing the weak spots of Bitcoin basically through this federated model. And then also aiming at very rapid, large scale rollout. That's something to be excited about for sure. Obi, man.
There is,
love these conversations.
I wanted to say something on that because there was a question you asked tonight, and it relates to this, which was around privacy, and you talked about one country, one city, and another. And this was actually something that every time I get involved in talking to people about this, I discover new things, and some of the discoveries came from conversations with, for example, Rene Picard, where he talked about the scaling of the Lightning Network. And later on with people, other members of the community working directly on the Lightning Network. And what we realized is that Lightning obviously provides a massive level of scaling over over Bitcoin and a significant improvement in privacy. But there are still shortcomings in privacy, which are being worked on. And there are still limitations on scaling. It turns out that this vision of the world that we are working on for this mass rollout of federations. So each federation is federated, but we expect in the fullness of time, hundreds of thousands, or if not millions of federations. So that's actually a decentralized network of federated federated Chaumian mints connected to each other, obviously by the Bitcoin mainnet, but also via the Lightning Network. That actually leads to a scenario which allows usage of the Lightning Network to scale. It also has the potential to make using the Lightning Network, being a Lightning node on the Lightning Network, far more lucrative. And finally, it provides higher, much, much higher levels of privacy for users of the Lightning Network and the main chain. So to the example of, in the example of privacy specifically, within a federation, let's say that federation is Las Vegas. Within that federation, you have perfect privacy. If there is another federation, say Reno, within that federation, you have perfect privacy. Now, let's say between Reno and Las Vegas, there's a road that connects them, massive Lightning Network, a main channel. And then there's another road that comes off that road to a private mansion, you know, the Breedlove mansion. Right? And that's effectively self-custody with your own Lightning, self-sovereign Bitcoin node and Lightning node, and you're handling your all your channel rebalancing. And just like your own private road and your own private mansion, you're going to, the overhead to manage that compared to the overhead to manage an apartment in an apartment block in a city is going to be much higher. But if you are capable of doing that and you're capable of guarding yourself and managing yourself, you should do it. It's definitely the best. But even though Lightning has a far higher privacy guarantees than using the main network, there is still some leakage of information. So imagine you had an eavesdropper monitoring traffic on these roads, this is the Lightning Network. If you were to send a payment from Breedlove Mansion to Las Vegas, that would be the equivalent of a car or a messenger going from the Breedlove Mansion to Las Vegas. Let's say there's another mansion called Obi Mansion, and that again was fully self-sovereign with its own Lightning node. If you were going to send a car from Breedlove Mansion to Obi Mansion, someone snooping the network will realize that a car has gone from Breedlove Mansion to Obi Mansion. Yeah. Now, if on the other hand, you were sending that to Las Vegas to someone, I have a pied-à-terre in an apartment in Las Vegas. Someone eavesdropping the network will know that someone from Breedlove Mansion, i.e. Breedlove, has sent a car to someone in Las Vegas. They just won't know who that someone is. And then if you have a pied-à-terre, an apartment in Reno, and I have an apartment in Las Vegas, as well as our own mansions, then if I were to send a car from my apartment to yours, someone eavesdropping the Lightning Network will know that someone, but they don't know who, but someone in Las Vegas has sent a car to someone in Reno. And that's all they will know. And so even if you're self-sovereign, it will make sense that if you're going to do your daily spending, you don't do it from Breedlove Mansion. You send, you know, the money you need for the day, and you go to town in Las Vegas. And then, as the saying goes, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Uh-huh. And it's the same for this. Even the governor or whatever it is, I'm not sure about the structures in U.S. And governmental systems, but the governor of Las Vegas, pardon me if I'm wrong, the senator of Las Vegas or whatever it is, manage or the board, the committee who manage Las Vegas, have also, because of Chaumian Mint, eCash protocol, have no idea who is doing what in Las Vegas as well. It still makes sense to do your daily driving from there, i.e. the interactions you want to happen happen in Las Vegas. If they stay in Las Vegas, then it's completely private. And even if they go out of Las Vegas, someone monitoring the network will only know that someone within Las Vegas performed that transaction. So it provides much, much better privacy for an increased, simpler user experience compared to you making all your payments directly from your Lightning wallet. So you'll store 95 or 99.9% of your value there. But when you want to spend, send it to your Fedimint wallet and spend from there. Worst case, if you were to lose that, it's the same as losing your purse out on an evening. So right. It gives you much better privacy guarantees.
That's super cool. The higher guarantee you get on privacy just by interfacing with these other, I guess, other anonymity sets, right? Just participating in the federated model. That's super.
Yeah, we like to call them privacy sets, but yeah.
Privacy sets, got it. Obi, man, awesome conversation. There's a few more points here I think we could go through, which I guess we'll have to save for next time. In the meantime, could you please, I think we did this last time, but just in case my audience didn't hear, could you please let my audience know where they can find out more about you or your work?
So thanks. To find out more about me, you can, as usual, find me on Twitter. So I'm simply @OBI on Twitter. But also to find out more about Fedi, the company, this FEDI.xyz, and then the protocol, the Fedimint protocol that powers Fedi, Fedimint, FEDIMINT.org. Those are the best places to find out about me and about us.
Fantastic. We'll include that in the show notes. And I will see you again here next time.
Thanks very much.